This is Long Shots, VSiN's premier golf betting podcast. Here's Matt Brown, Wes Reynolds, and Kelly Bidlin.
Hello, and welcome to Long Shots, golf betting podcast here on the VSiN Podcast Network. I am Matt Brown, joined each and every week by Wes Reynolds and Kelly Bidlin. This is the Farmers Edition. And guys, if you're listening to this, go make your bets. This thing starts on Wednesday. Right. Don't hang around. Don't hang around. Don't think like, you know what? I'll put it off. I'll remember to do it tomorrow at lunch. That's going to be too late. Don't do it. Don't wait till tomorrow at lunch. Go in, take what we say here on this podcast. Love it, leave it, whatever you want to do, but be sure and get your bets in before they tee off early Pacific time on Wednesday morning. They are trying to avoid going head to head against the two championship games. And so this thing will end on Saturday. So, Wes, the big story heading into this, and I'm sure this is something you talked about in your column over on VSiN.com, is the fact that, as we know here in Vegas, and it's even worse over in California, it has been very, very wet over the last several days, and that takes a south course that is already the longest course on tour and makes it play about another couple hundred yards longer. So the south course is just going to be an absolute bear, at least on these first couple of days.
Yeah, because ordinarily with rain, you're like, okay, it's going to soften at the course and make it easier. Not the case here, especially on the south course, almost 7,800 yards, the longest course on the PGA Tour, by the way. And because of, not only the marine layer and the cooler temperatures and the weather that they've had out in San Diego, plus the fact that you do have 4-inch rough. And you're actually also going to have that on the north course, too. So the north course, which plays about 2.5 strokes easier, is probably going to play a little bit harder than it normally would, even though it's only, 7,250 yards, the Weisskopf design. That's usually where you can make some scoring, and it's still going to be easier. But they only play that one day on Wednesday, Thursday, and then it's a south course for the final 36. So, yeah, it's going to make it more difficult. The rough is going to be thicker. The rough around the greens especially is going to be difficult because you're going to miss greens here. These are only like 5,000 square foot greens, some of the smaller ones on tour. So you're not going to just hit, driver, wedge, pitch, and putt here. You're going to miss a lot of greens. So yeah, this is going to play a lot more difficult than even it has in years past.
And it is not a traditional rotation deal like we saw last week, guys. It's two courses. They will only play the north course once, and there will be three rounds should you make the cut over on the south course. So Wes, a lot of emphasis is going to be looked at from all of our statistical standpoint from the south course, but with the north course, it plays 500-600 yards shorter. It's a lot more gettable. It's not up against the water. It's more inland. There should be a little bit of protection if there is any sort of breeze, any sort of thing like that. So we have traditionally seen the scoring in this tournament happen on the north course.
Yeah, and it is a shorter course, as you mentioned. More tree line, just 42 bunkers, whereas you have double that amount on the south course on the Reese Jones redesign. A lot of the greens are open fronted, so you get a lot of bump and runs here. Greens are bent grass. Of course, on the south course, they're Poa Anua. So, these greens run very pure on the north course. And I think last year there was about a 2.5 shot difference between the north course and the south course. Average under par was like 1.85 under par, 70.15 as a total score. So, yeah, the redesign, though, they did redesign it a few years ago, so it has been a little bit more difficult. But that is where you usually, are going to have your low numbers. Not that you can't have them on the south, but in recent years, at least, it's been the north course where you can do the score in the first 2 days.
Kelly, as you started to look at these courses, yeah, we talk about the south course being just an absolute monster. The other thing I think that we have to take into account is the fact that this has been typically very tough rough, and now we are likely to have rough that, with all of this rain, either grew up or is at least going to be wet, a little bit tougher to come out of. And so maybe a little bit more emphasis even than before on some of these guys that are maybe a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger, a little bit better with those super long irons and things like that. That has been we don't plug in a ton on like who's great from like 225 out and things, because that's not really today's game, but that's probably something that we looked at a little bit more this week.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, just with the length of the course, I think it's, you got to be looking at guys that are either long off the tee, or if they're not going to be long off the tee, got to be able to hit those long irons well. But yeah, I'm really interested to see. I think scores could potentially be, you know, pretty low here. And, you know, I don't think we're not going to see anything below scores. I mean, finishing score, like it may be in single digits, something like that, not minus 25 or anything that we've seen past a couple weeks. We know this always plays tough. It's one of the toughest courses these guys see every year anyways. But like you guys talked about with the weather already, this rough on the south course is supposed to be grown out more than it was in years past. Anyways, like you guys talked about, if that's wet, it did change my handicap a little bit this year, where you're talking 4 inches of rough, and if it's kind of wet, and they're already saying the course has been soaked kind of all week, so they're even worried how it's going to be played kind of tomorrow and Friday from that being affected, even if it's not raining tomorrow and Friday while they're out there. So, I looked a little bit more, you know, at accuracy off the tee, you know, as well as that distance. We know the distance is important here, but I looked a little bit more on accuracy this year than I have in years past, just because I think there could be some troublesome scrambling this week if you get caught in that rough.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, and we'll certainly go in and break all of this down as we get going here. Take a quick look here at the odds board, and, you know, listen, it's a post John Rahm PGA Tour. Rory is not playing in this tournament, whatnot. So you look at the top, and the 9-1 actually sits with Xander Schauffele over at DraftKings, 11-1 on Patrick Cantlay, 11 on Colin Morikawa. Max Homa is sitting at 12. Then we get into some of these names that, if you're not a golfnik, maybe you're going like, what the hell is, how are these guys so short? But these are big time up and coming, big time players, guys that everybody is super excited about. Minwoo Lee, Ludwig Aber. I mean, we've got, then you kind of get into the steadfast guys in the Tony Finaus, the Sung JMs, Jason Days. Then you get into these other guys where we know it's a roll of the dice, right? Saith Theegala, all the talent in the world. Can he get it done for 4 rounds? Keegan, the heartbreaker of this podcast, that nobody's broken more hearts than Keegan Bradley on this podcast, you know, and then you get a little bit lower, and it's some guys that I think that maybe we'll talk about, and I don't know if they end up on people's cards, but some interesting names, certainly from a modeling standpoint. Erik Cole seems to pop in every single model every single week. Nikolai Højgaard is sitting in that 35 to 40, 45-ish range. Harris English, who's had some success on tracks like this. Will Zalatoris bounced back to look like at least a little bit closer to himself last week. His odds have shrunk a lot. He's down to 50-1. So going to be some interesting stuff to talk about here as we get going. But Wes, let's get into what you valued this week as you were putting stuff into your model.
Yeah. And we start with the driving, of course. I think you got to have a good mixture of distance and accuracy. So I did total driving. That's not something I usually model. I just went by what we saw last season with total driving here. Approach, of course, you're going to have to be good with the irons, especially very long irons. So I did proximity 175 to 200, also did 200 plus. And then from around the green, and I valued that a little bit more this week than I normally would, I combo of scrambling and strokes gained around the green is what I did this week. And then strokes gained putting POA, because you are going to be putting on this POA for 3 rounds. And these greens, by the way, are pretty fast, 12 and a half on the stimp meter. But like we get with POA greens, they can be unpredictable and they can be bumpy in certain spots. And all of a sudden you hit a pure putt, and then it hits a bump, and all of a sudden you miss. So you got to be used to these. And they don't play much POA except for the West Coast. They have some East Coast POA, like at the Travelers, but it putts much more pure than the West Coast POA, I think. Bogey avoidance I included, and then a couple of the scoring stats just for context. 450 to 500, strokes gained par 4, 6 of the par 4s on the South Course are of that length. Strokes gained par 5 as well. I think you're going to have to take advantage of the par 5s, because you're going to make bogeys here. You're going to miss greens here. I think 2 of the par 5s are like 550 to 600, and then a couple of them, 2 of them are over 600 yards, so I didn't go with the yardage there. I just went with the strokes gained par 5. But yeah, you're going to have to take advantage of those, because I think that this place is going to play tougher this year.
Yeah, Kelly, I really, really leaned into off the tee, driving distance, total driving, and par five was really what I leaned into very, very hard here with this one. The par five scoring at this course is basically where you have to make all of your numbers. If you look, we are talking 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different holes that have at least a 23% bogey rate. So one out of every four guys is going to bogey six of the holes that are out here on this course. And you start to look and it's, oh, you get to hole number, you get to hole number six, a 42% birdie rate. You get to hole number nine, a 30% birdie rate. A hole number 13, another 30% birdie rate. Hole 18, a 35% birdie rate. Those are all par fives. I mean, all of the scoring has to be done on par fives. And so I leaned heavy into not only par five scoring just in general, but long par five scoring as well.
Yeah, that is something I looked at heavily. I think any tournament that we talk about, when you see four par fives on the card, that's always going to be something that's included in my model. But specifically, the importance this week, yes, is overwhelming of where you have to be able to score here. And then it goes back to, you know, what it all starts. With the type of player where you've got to get distance somewhere. So just go back to what I was saying before. You either got to be long off the tee, or you got to be good with, you know, long iron play, right? And I think there's probably more guys on tour than people realize with that. Like, maybe, you know, Colin Morikawa is a good example, right? It might not be the longest guy off the tee, but he is great with long iron play. So there's a lot of guys like that out there on tour that you can make up for that distance lost off the tee sometimes, but you got to look that way. So yeah, just overall, you guys hit basically on everything. Off the tee stuff, really important here every single year. So yeah, strokes gained off the tee, total driving distance, factor that all in. And then, you know, strokes gained approach, I looked at the proximities, 175 to 200 plus, par fives, par four, 450 to 500. I think we have six that fit that in that range here on the South course. And then, you know, just going back to what I said a little bit earlier, did factor in scrambling a little bit more, scrambling around the green play more this year than I have in years past. It doesn't mean I'm it's the heaviest thing for me, but it's up there. It's up there this week. And again, just heavier than I've looked at it in years past is what I put it like.
Yeah. The other thing was that I leaned into that I think maybe more than people did this week was kind of the short game stuff, just in general, all of that type of stuff. If you look historically here, again, a tournament that is played here every year, so we have a good bit of history and what has worked at Torrey, and guys in their short game that have done well have consistently placed inside the top 10 at this. If you're gaining on that short game. And then the other thing is just, as you know, bogey avoidance / three putt avoidance, that type of stuff, because we're getting a deal here where, listen, you're going to get bogeys anyway, just because of the nature of the course. And if I need guys that aren't going to get sloppy and just have sloppy bogeys out there. And so something else that I leaned into pretty heavily when it was factored in. And so got some interesting numbers that were popped up, and, you know, we'll get to our plays, official plays here in just a little bit. But for me, I don't know about you guys, I could have probably, if somebody would have said, here, you're going to plug in this and then like hit run and see what the model looks like, I would have guessed with 80% accuracy, 8 of the top 10 names that showed up at the top of my, like just knowing like who was in this tournament and what I found important and whatever. But then there's two where there are a couple in a couple of different versions where I'm like, what the hell? How did he end up in there? But Wes, Xander, Colin, Cantlay, Homa. So, like, it's just like I could have guessed that like blindly, you know, as to where they were going to show up in the models.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think you do got to kind of value both a little bit. Just if you look at the recent history of who has won this event. Yeah, you've had bombers in the last decade or decade plus here. Luke List, John Rahm, Tiger, Bubba Watson. Rose can get it out there off the tee. So can Stallings. And then you've had like mid-range guys that have those really elite short games. Patrick Reed, Jason Day, Brant Snedeker, Ben Crane. Not exactly a long hitter. Granted, that was 2010, but one here. Because when you look at the length of the course, you're like, oh my God, you know, you just got to go just driving distance here. Mm-hmm. And that's who's going to win. But these fairways are pretty darn narrow. as well. You know, they're less than 30 yards wide, so you're going to miss fairways and you're going to get in that that 4-inch thick rough. So yeah, you got to do a little bit bomb and gouge, but the fact that the rough is that thick too around the greens, short game is so important this week.
Yeah, I was pretty shocked, Kelly, at some of the names towards the top. And honestly, I'll admit, not all of them made it onto my betting card in some way, shape, or form. Were you pretty chalky with the way that your model ended up?
Yeah, I think there's interesting ranges. Like you said, I think if I'm looking at one, I could have guessed 8 of these 10 names, you know, in the top 10, probably. I think what's interesting, though, is probably the names that are kind of in the 10 to 20 range that shoot up there. And I know there's one guy I know, Wes Bett, as well, that I'll bring up later on, that is a pretty big name. It has kind of been off the radar recently, and was kind of intrigued by how he was spiking. But for the most part, yes. The bunch of the guys in that top 10, I could have guessed. And it is Shoffley, Cantlay, Morikawa, Homa, those top four, you know, in some order with everything that I ran.
One thing of note, guys, if you put in bets super early for this tournament, Justin Thomas has withdrawn from this tournament. Yeah. So if you had him on your card, it's not in there anymore. So go in and if you want to bet somebody else.
He was right there last week at the Amex. So he got a good enough finish that qualifies him for the next designated events at Pebble Beach. I think he had to get in like the top 30 or something in points. But
he could have fallen out of that, right? That's why he's skipping this more.
Yeah. So I think he's like 4 or 5 spots clear. So, he's going to withdraw. Wasn't the only Alabama guy that withdrew. Of course, we got to bring up history was made, unfortunately, you know, sore spots here, but Nick Dunlap, first amateur since 1991, Phil Mickelson at the Tucson Open, first amateur to win on the PGA Tour. Nick Dunlap, about 300-1. I think he was 400-1 at some places. The Alabama golf coach was there watching him and Justin Thomas in the final pairing with Sam Burns, who looked like he was going to win the thing. You know, sorry for you guys. I didn't have a guy. I had one was my closest guy, and he wasn't going to win. So, yeah, Nick Dunlap, decision to make, though. He was supposed to be in this event this week. He was 150-1, so he was cut and he was discounted, but returned back to Alabama. I have a feeling he's going to finish this college golf season in Alabama, and then he may turn pro after the Open Championship, because keep in mind, he's a defending U.S. amateur winner. So he's in the U.S. Open, he's in the Masters, he's in the Open Championship. And when he turns pro, he has the 2-year exemption now to 2026.
Yeah.
So he may wait on this, play my college golf season, try to win an NCAA championship, play in all these majors, and then turn pro like around late July or August. That's what I think he's going to do. But he is a withdrawal this week.
I was kind of reading through all that, reading through all that afterward, Wes, where I was kind of like, all right, he's either going to turn pro in the next like week, or it's going to be after he finishes this golf, college golf season. The part I hadn't factored in, though, is you're right, him winning the amateur, he's qualified for everything. Yeah, I mean, after winning this tournament and that, you're qualified for majors in 2.5 years on the PGA Tour.
And look, he could probably get a sponsor's exemption if he wanted. He can't get into the designated events yet. So, I believe, though, he's in the Century next year if he chooses to turn pro and play in that event because of the event win. But yeah, this guy was looking at his golf ranking. He's like just outside the top 60 in the world right now. In the official world golf ranking.
Sorry, I'm very distracted by what's on Golf Channel right now, because it's Rondé Barber and Bernard Longer together talking about something, and I have no clue what that could possibly
Bernard, by the way, just announced this will be his final Masters.
Okay, there you go. Way to tie it back in, Wes.
There it is. Comes over ground. Yes, those of you who have been longtime Long Shots listeners, you guys have now felt the pain with us 2 weeks in a row. The pains of golf betting have come around two weeks in a row now for us, as we were on somebody who was right there to win the tournament right up until the very end.
This was probably more painful than my Adrian Meronk on the DP, because it was like, you know what, I'm going to fade Rory at an event he owns, and sometimes the favorite's going to win, and Rory did, by the way, over at the Dubai Desert Classic.
Yeah, it's brutal. I will say this. I often have complained about the betting options here in Nevada, I will say this, and I say this proudly, and this has nothing to do with the fact that we have a relationship with these guys or anything like that. Circa brings an option that nobody else does where you can bet the no. And it is the greatest thing for golf bettors there is basically on the face of the planet, because in a tournament like this past week, there would have been no way for me to straight hedge that. Yep. In a tournament in which anyone in the field can go 10 under.
Because you got to play.
Yeah, there was
you
just
gotta
no
play
way.
Like five guys, because yeah, I get asked that every Sunday when I have a guy. It's like, are you hedging? I'm like, I got to wait for in game because when the leaderboard is so condensed, you know, it's one thing if you've got like a 3-shot gap with the top two or three guys with the rest of the field and you feel secure that you're going to keep that there. So, yeah, there's like no way to play like, you know, half a dozen guys necessarily in this thing, especially an event like that where, you know, you're going to have to shoot 28 plus under or something to win the thing. It's, you know, different when you got to shoot 12 under and that's going to be your winning score. So, that's the only way really to kind of hedge out of that stuff. But I want to bring up something that Matt brought up last week with the Amex. This is a tournament I probably will have less exposure on next season, because you got to know which tournaments are your strong ones. I think we all have our strong ones. You know, somebody's pretty good at one event, somebody's good at another. Mm-hmm. The Amex has never really been a great event for me because I had a lot of placement markets in position and they just nosedived on Sunday. And if you're making pars, you're going to get passed.
Yeah.
You're going to be passed by so many guys. So something maybe to keep in mind next year with an event where, look, an amateur can win it, for God's sake.
Yeah, and exactly. Exactly. And that's something I think as we move forward, you know, we'll always talk our strategy. And listen, like, my strategy is ever evolving with all of this. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, as different things become available to us in these markets and how things evolve, like, I'm not going to be steadfast and all that. And listen, it's my strategy. I think it's y'all strategy as well. I know there's a lot of people out there who are just hashtag team no hedge, and they're just like, you never hedge, and if you hedge then you're an idiot and all. It's like, I am firmly against that. I'm firmly on the other side of that, especially in golf of all things, where one guy win you, again, you had, there's no better example of it than this past week. You have a multiple time winner on the PGA Tour standing on the 17th tee against an amateur, and he dunked it in the water. Like, I mean, like, it's like, it's in, he's the one that dunked it in the water, not the amateur. Like, it's just, it is one guy wins a tournament and one bad swing can completely alter. He finished T7. Yeah. He went from winning the damn tournament to finishing T7. You know, it's, and so I feel good about the fact that I took the no price on Burns, and like, I was going to win some money if he lost. I was going a whole lot more if he won, but I mean, you know, I finished the tournament in the black, and that's really all I can ask for, you know?
Yeah. You gotta be an earner with this thing. Yeah. And you know, sometimes you learn by losing. Like, lesson learned for me, cause I was in the red with this thing, cause the placement market just fell apart for me on Sunday. So yeah, that's the way you got to do it. And that's why we emphasize these placement markets, because most week that's going to be how you earn your money, or at least break even and recoup losses, you know, because the outrights are even tougher to hit. Look, we've had what, a 200-1, a 300-1, and I think maybe even a 400-1 win in the first 3 weeks. And, you know, this show's called Long Shots. We just hadn't been on the right long shots.
We hadn't been on the right ones yet. We'll see what happens this week. We'll give you our cards right here after these brief messages. All right, Kelly Bidlin, this is why people tune into this thing. I kid, they want to hear the process of getting to all of these picks, but let's go ahead and hear what has made your card so far. And I want to put the caveat out there, so far. It's a short week for all of us. We're coming off of a NFL week. We're writing articles. We're doing other stuff. You're doing hardwood handicap. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on. So we reserve the right to add a play or two by the time this thing tees off on Wednesday morning. If I remember to, I will try to tweet out like anything that does get added to the card.
Yeah, this is, there's a couple more things I know I'm going to add pre-tournament. So all my stuff will be up at VSiN.com. All our stuff will be up at VSiN.com. Go there and check later today. I'll have my full card loaded. I do think, though, Matt, you know, there was a couple guys we were talking, you were and I were discussing before we started recording, that I do think there's a strategy that you can take this week with looking at getting in on some guys live. When we talk about the difference between that South course and North course and how they play, And, you know, some guys that start out on the South course that might you know, have a little bit tougher time in that first round, get that easier course in the second round. I think I'm going to be looking on some of the shorter odd guys to jump in after the first round.
That is a already in the books strategy for me for Xander and Max. Like, I don't like their numbers where they currently sit. They both start on the South. I'm hoping they play okay, but just can't score as well as some people that start on the North. And then we get a more favorable look at both of those guys. They're both at the very top of the odds board, and it's just a little too short for me. Like, Xander, you know, 9-1 on Xander, I get he's had a lot of success there. The guy hadn't won in 18 months. So, I mean, it's kind of like,
It goes back to what you said, Matt. Like, this is a new golf betting world. Like, look at the odds today. We're talking about a tournament of this caliber, and we don't have John Rahm, we don't have Scottie Scheffler, we don't have Rory McIlroy. So, like, this is, and I'm not trying to be argumentative when I say, I'm just saying there's four guys at the top that clearly belong at the top to me. And I think that you could make a strong case for actually betting any four of them and the odds being okay with what the rest of the field looks like. To me, the problem for me is that there's just the one guy I would toss out is Cantlay. I actually don't have much interest in betting him this week. I think Shoffley, Morikawa, and Homa are both really strong, and sticking out to me. I just don't, there's not enough of a separation for me to go in on one here pre-tournament among, instead of the other. So I think I'm going to wait and handle that after the first round. And then I think there's two interesting names you guys pointed out earlier that I believe one of the two, if not both, are on your cards of Minwoo Lee and Ludvig. And I just frankly don't have any interest in betting those guys yet, where I do have one prop bet on Ludvig I'll get to, but like, I kind of want to see it a little bit first. Like, this is we've kind of already made the odds jump with these guys where it looks like they've won and played all this, played all these years on the PGA Tour. And I'm just not convinced that these odds are truly accurate for where they should be for those
odds makers don't want to get exposed on those guys because they're proven winners on the DP World Tour. And actually Ludvig did get his first PGA Tour win late in the season in the finale. But yeah, if you go by like the trends aren't those guys' friends. No, those guys may have the talent to supersede them. But if you look, 13, I think it was 20 of the last 22 had played in at least 5 Farmers Insurance Open events. And these are first timers here. You know, Højgaard, you could throw him in the mix. Nikolai Højgaard as well. 17 of the last 19 had at least one top 10 finish here. 26 of the last 30 winners had at least 4 previous career wins on the PGA Tour. Homa fell into that trend last year as well. So, yeah, this is an event that you see a lot more veteran guys, even if they're in their late 20s. These are guys that have played here several times. So that's why I kind of took a stand against these guys this week, because I want to see it a little bit more. So I'm not shocked to see them priced that way, but it's like they're priced better than more proven players
out here.
So,
and you hit it, Wes. You hit it. Look, there are sharp golf bettors that are going to bet these guys. And the books don't want too much exposure, I think, on longer odds.
A couple of years ago, these guys been maybe 50, 60 to 1.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, oh my God, I got to grab that number.
Yes. There's a long way of me discussing. I just think this is a different world. And I think it's really glaringly obvious this week, I think, with this specific tournament, when you look at this type of odds board. So, where I started out is, I haven't bet him yet. I will be betting him though. Sung JM, I will be betting him pre-tournament here. I'm a little concerned though, because I don't believe I saw him on Wes Reynolds' card, who's been all.
He was like my last leave off. I was actually debating kind of in that mid range. I'll play him for a top 20 or something like that, but he's the guy I'm worried that I left off that's going to win.
Yeah. So I do think I started there. I will be looking, I think, to add one of those top three guys after that first round, if I get that opportunity, like with Homa or Shoffley, like we talked about, Matt, on the South course, starting off there. So I will be looking to add those guys in tournament. I do think that they are the rightful favorites there. So Sungjae, and then I know everybody gasp when I say this next name. Keegan Bradley is on my card this week. 33-1 for Keegan. You could shop around. You probably find longer than seeing him at DraftKings right now, 35-1. Did grab him. This is a guy who's been he's been playing well. I know we've had the bad beats here already on Keegan. look, it's also a guy who's played well at the, at this tournament here recently, too. I think we always think of Keegan. We think of some of these majors and Northeast courses and stuff like that. But second here a year ago, T16 a few years ago, he's had three top 10 finishes in the past six times he's teed it up here. So, you know, Keegan's played well here, played an outright on him, played a top 20 on him. Then one bomb-ish for me. I guess this is kind of a shorter number for this guy, but he has one here before. Luke List, long off the tee, 80-1, did play an outright on him for here. Did win this 2 years ago, I think is when he won here. Yeah, 2 years ago is when he took this down. So did play an outright on him. Top 20 then on Keegan, I mentioned. Then the one guy I was kind of hinting at earlier was Hideki. It doesn't really have the, you know, the recent results that really stick out to you, but stat wise what he can do, you know, kind of round the green scrambling approach here, I think all lines up. We saw him finish last summer pretty strong, so I took a longer price on the top 20 in him, plus 285. I found out there, I think anything mid 200s is worth playing. And then the only other thing on my card right now, I did play Ludvig, top Scandinavian, at plus 120. There's only about three other guys I'll be battling out with in that market, so that was the way that I chose to attack him. I, you know, really talking about Ludvig and Minwoo, and I'll let you guys get more to these guys, but I do think this is, look, a course that sets up well for both these guys. I understand that. Wouldn't be shocked at all if we see a lot of success from those guys this week. I'm just not prepared to get in on the outright markets with them yet.
Wes, you know, I do want to put this out there to people as well who look at course history here in this thing. Like, this is just a really tough ass golf course. And yeah. So, you know, let's look at some of these guys, for example, that, you know, have had some success here. And it's just like, just to kind of give you an idea that if you like a guy and he got cut last year or whatever, like, it's not the end of the world, right? No, I mean, we're looking at a guy. Okay, let's take Will Zalatoris, you know, pre-injury. Zalatoris cut, then he finished seventh, then he got cut, and then he finished second, right? I mean, this is four consecutive years in this tournament. Tony Finau, you know, like second, cut ninth. Whatever. Like, so there are like all these guys that have had success have some cuts that are mixed in here as well. Max Homa won this thing last year, got cut the previous two chances that he had, you know, with the Farmers in the U.S. Open here. I mean, so there's like guys that have had success that also it's just mixed in with some cuts because this is just a very hard place to play.
Yeah.
It's a very tough course, you know? So
yeah, here's a funnier one too. Jason Day, second in 2014, won the thing in 2015, missed the cut in 2016, missed the cut in 2017, then wins in 2018 and then finishes fifth in 2019. So you get, I mean, all these guys have like missed a cut. It is very, very rare to see, you know, numbers on all the grid here, whatever grid you use in terms of looking at previous form, everybody's missed a cut here.
Yeah. And so I don't want people to be shied off and go like, but this guy missed the cut last year. It's like, yeah, but a lot of guys have missed the cut. And, you know, I mean, Max Homa won last year. He missed the cut the year, he missed the U.S. Open cut and he missed the cut the year before here at the Farmers. So, I mean, like he had two consecutive cuts on this course to come back and win it the year after that. So, I mean, it's just, it's hard. It's hard. Golf's hard. And it's really hard when it's on a hard course. So just don't let it scare you off if a guy didn't have a good finish here last year, because it doesn't mean he can't have a good finish here this year. Sorry, Wes, I didn't want to derail anything, but it's just one of those things where like, I've heard a lot of times, like I had a couple of buddies text me and they're like, yeah, but he looked like shit here last year. And it's like, well, yeah, but I mean, like, it doesn't really mean.
Yeah, look at the surrounding 4 years.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys that look horrible. Yeah, there's a lot of guys that look horrible on this course at times. So, all right, Wes, who's on your card?
Yeah, and I went with the intermediate. I did not go with the top guys with Schauffele, Homa, Cantlay, Morikawa. Passed on Ludvig as well. Certainly has the talent and the ability to win here, but need to see a little bit of something. So then I kind of went to those, you know, maybe seventh, eighth, ninth guys on the board. And Kelly played one of them in Sungjae Im. So I was down to Sungjae, Jason Day, who profiles great here, obviously. But I just thought the number was a little short at 25. Yeah. So I went with another 25, and that's Tony Finau. Five top 10s, four top 6s in his 7 appearances here. I think he shook off some rust. He finished just inside the top 30 last week, but all 4 rounds were in the 60. I just think if you look at last year, he was actually the second choice on the odds board behind John Rahm. who at that point, I believe, was the defending champ, obviously had won the U.S. Open here. And now he's like the ninth choice on the odds board because of the addition of Ludwig and Minwoo Lee. And I was like, wait a minute, that's a little bit of a dip, even though it doesn't feel like a 25-1. Tony Finau has really dipped. But I kind of think he has. You know, this is a guy that's got great form here, very good off the tee. I think he fits more this type of thing than some kind of random birdie fest like at the American Express at Palm Springs. So Tony Finau, 25-1. And then a guy who may be the outlier for my trend, even though he has a lot more experience here, having played this, maybe not in tournament play, but he grew up 2 hours from here. Sahith Theegala, 33-1. Began 2024, runner-up at the Century, finished fourth here last year. He also fits the little narrative that Max Homa brought to the forefront last year, won the Fortinet in the fall, and then won the Farmers in the spring. So maybe Sahith Theegala can make that 2 years in a row at 33-1. Sepp Straka, 50-1. If you asked even hardcore golf fans to list the current top 20 players in the official world golf rankings, Sepp Straka might be the least listed name at number 17, but yeah. This is a guy that's won two straight seasons, won the John Deere last year, was seventh at the PGA, second at the Open, of course, won the year before at PGA National at the Honda Classic. He does pretty well on difficult golf courses, actually, even though put aside the John Deere, which is a birdie fest, but he does well on classical courses, so I think he could go well here. One name that got mentioned earlier already, Harris English, 53-1. A 10th and a 14th in Hawaii to start the year, so pretty good form. Lost the playoff here, actually, to Scott Stallings in 2015, but has a couple top 10s here at the Farmers in his career. And remember, he was third and right in the mix at the U.S. Open in 2021 that John Rahm eventually won with those birdies on 17 and 18 on Sunday, and then Louis Oosthuizen with an errant drive on the 71st hole ended up second. Harris English was right behind in third. He's won on POA before. Granted, it's less bumpy POA on the East Coast, having won at the Travelers a couple years ago, but I think he'll be comfortable on these greens. And Matt, you talked about guys that miss cuts, you know, and not to worry about guys that miss cuts. What about a guy that's missed it three times in a row? And that's Bo Hosler at 66-1. But he played probably the best golf of his career. Yep. At least the most consistent. Nine top 30s in his last 10 starts. California native, best finish here is ninth in 2020. I think he's a better player now. He's really good around the greens, too. He's one of those guys in scrambling, strokes gained around the green that profiled very high. And then another name that was mentioned who's kind of drifted a little bit, I found him at 70-1, and that's Hideki Matsuyama. Two top 10s in last five starts here at Torrey, was third here at 2019. Doesn't leap off the page, but if you look at guys who are good with long irons, and you're going to have a lot of 200-plus yard shots or 175 to like 190, 200, Matsuyama's right there. His approach numbers are very good, and he kind of fits the profile of like a veteran player that wins here. Justin Rose did it a few years ago. Guy that's a little bit older, got some experience, got a few wins, might not be playing well coming in, and then all of a sudden shows out. So Matsuyama, 70-1. I didn't go with the deep bomb this week, but my longest shot was 80-1. Patrick Rogers, who does have a couple top 10s here, is in the FedEx Cup top 50, so he's actually in all the designated events for the rest of the year. Should have won that PGA Tour, that first win. Actually, he probably should have won it years ago, but still hasn't. Barracuda got beat in the playoff by Akshay Bhatia. So Patrick Rogers is one of those guys. He might be like a Luke List, where, you know, hasn't won, and then all of a sudden, you know, gets that big breakthrough here, and Patrick Rogers, 80-1, finishes the card.
So, guys, if you listened to all last year, we do not discuss our plays before we come on this podcast. So, I have had some of my plays disparaged by people on here, and I've had some of my plays that equal other people's plays on here. So just to let you know, that lets you know we don't discuss this stuff, and it's not just like, oh, we're all just like putting in the same stuff when it all comes down to it. Because I did, in fact, play Minwoo Lee this week. I was waiting to play him for this specific tournament. I didn't want to play him in the tournaments leading up to this. This was the one that I was holding off on him. Yeah, 25-1 is not the greatest thing in the world, but I don't know how many more 25-1s we're going to get with him once things get rock and rolling. So I'd rather be early than late. This course just fits everything he does except for those long irons with him. And with that, I think if he can just be average with the long irons. Everything else is just, he putts great. His short game is great. He bombs it off the tee. Everything's great. It's just, you look at the long iron numbers, they're not great. And so if he can just be kind of field average with those, I think he can be in the mix and we'll be going with that. But again, Wes, we didn't talk. I played Jason Day. It's one of those things when I look at a guy who has been ridiculously consistent at this course over the years, it's Jason Day. And, you know, you look at those couple of missed cuts of recent, that's when he was dealing with all that injury stuff and that he, you know, all the back injury things, the stuff that was going on in his personal life and all of that. I mean, outside of that, Day's record here has just been absolutely fantastic. First, fifth, 16th. There was that miscut in 21, but then a third, seventh in his last two trips as well. It just great, great form. These Aussies, I kind of like them here in this, on this course, the way that you got to grind, the way that its course is not going to be a birdie fest. Like, I like a guy like Jason Day. And as I said earlier, to a couple of podcasts ago, I like to take the old guys early in the season because I don't know what they're going to look like as the season progresses. Yeah, right.
That's what happened with me with Justin Rose at Pebble Beach last year. And he ends up winning.
Yeah. I just like to play the old guys early, especially guys with injury history, like a Jason Day. He's healthy right now. And so I will play him healthy right now. He is also my one and done this week. I'm playing Jason Day as my one and done pick this week.
That was going to be mine.
Yeah. Wes, I also played Sahith. It's just, if you look, this guy, he's going to win a bunch of tournaments. He's going to win a bunch of tournaments along the way. The game is just way, way, way too good for him not to. I also played first round leader on the North course with Sahith Theegala. You can get that at 22-1 as well. He is starting on the North. He's a guy that I think could go out and shoot low in a first round on a North course where maybe the wetter conditions actually do help a little bit because, as Wes, as you mentioned, like, it'll hold the ball a little bit better. Any stuff, you know, some of the stuff might not roll off into the rough. Your drives might be a little bit more accurate. And so I'm hoping he can kind of get out to a lead here and then grind it out on those last 3 days over on the South. But give me first round leader on him as well for first round leader on the North course. I also played Sepp Straka.
Oh, wow.
I also played Sepp Straka. And same deal. Well, I mean, he fit every one of these categories. It was shocking to me how high he was in the models for me, given the price that we're getting on him at 50-1. I mean, Sepp Straka in one of my models was as high as 12th.
He feels like he doesn't get any respect at all, despite the fact that he was part of the Ryder Cup team and, you know, becoming a more consistent player, I think, every year on tour.
Yeah, well, I mean, high as 12.
That's always been the problem, right? It's just the consistency, right? Yeah. I feel like that. I love watching the guy. I feel like when he's on, he's so on and he's as good as anybody. It's just the consistency.
Yeah, so it was, I mean, again, the odds just didn't match where he was showing up comparatively to everybody else in the field. My one strictly model play that is, you know, I dug in, I looked at the numbers, I kind of get why the model loves him. I'm not in love with the play myself, but my one bomb is Sam Stevens at 175-1. He was inside the top 25 in every version of the model that I ran. And again, I put heavy emphasis on driving distance. I put heavy emphasis on things like that. He's one of the longer guys on tour. He putts really well on POA, which I also put into the model. So, I mean, I see why he finished as high as he did. You're not loving some of the bogey avoidance stuff. You're not loving some of the, other numbers on approach and things like that. But again, 175-1. I'm not expecting him to win, but we've had weird things happen so far this season and the model loved him. So that is kind of the one true model play for me. Those are the only five outrights in the account right now. As I said, I'm looking to play Xander and Max in game at better numbers because they do start on the South and I'm hoping that those numbers drift. I think I will play JJ Spawn in some way, shape or form. I don't know what that might be. I don't know if that's an outright or a top 10 or a top 20 or whatever, but JJ Spawn is like ridiculously high in all of my mind, like ridiculously high. He's in the top 10 in two of them. I mean, like literally, I don't get it. It's just, again, he's inside the top two in a couple of them. So I will be playing JJ Spawn in some way, shape or form. Top 10, Keegan Bradley, top 20 on Sungjae and Luke List, top 40 on Taylor Pendrith and Doug Gim. And those are strictly model plays on the top 40s there on Pendrith and Gim. Both of those guys, way, way higher than the prices kind of indicate on those guys. And so, Pendrith Gim, top 40. Sung J M, Luke List, top 20. Keegan Bradley, top 10. And TBD on JJ Spawn. I don't know exactly what I'm going to do with
somewhat of a home game for JJ Spawn, too. Much will be made of Xander being from San Diego. JJ Spawn also played his college golf at San Diego State.
Yeah. Right. So, what are you looking at, Kelly? I see a look on your face. I know people can't see you. This is audio only, but like, what's going on?
There's a look on my face. Because you're talking about, look, we've talked about this a lot early in the season. We draw so much off of our data. There was a name that both of you guys brought up that I kind of had in mind entering this tournament. Didn't really spike model-wise and stat-wise, so I stayed away from him. But you can make it a pod play on Sahith, because You guys have talked me in. I'm gonna be joining the boys and betting them.
There we go. Listen, Kelly, last 24 rounds, if you run it, he is the only guy outside of like the Xander Colin Cantlay, whatever, that is green all the way across the board. Like, not even, like, no red, no shade of red, no even pink. Like, he's the only guy that is green all the way across the board, meaning he's inside, like, the top 40-ish, you know, in the field and basically all of the categories and stuff. His last 24 rounds have been ridiculously good. So, hell, let's play the heater, right?
Let's do it. I was hoping to bet him anyways. I kind of was thinking it going into it, and the models, he didn't pop in the models, but we've talked about that. If you listen week after week, we talk about how early in the season we're less reliant on that stuff, and I'm more willing to fire from the gut a little bit more than, you know, what we're going to be later in the season.
Yeah. For what it's worth, eighth overall in my 24, eighth overall in my eighth overall in my 24, 11th in my 36, and where did he come in? 14th in the 50. So he did pop for me again. I weighted things a little bit differently than a lot of people this week. I guess when it's all said and done, what'll happen is Keegan will have the lead on the 16th hole in the fourth round, and then he'll blow it to Ludwig that we don't have.
No, that's not right. He'll blow it to find someone in the triple digits, like Chesson Hadley. You know, like Chesson Hadley's going to win it or something.
Yeah, it's going to be Taylor Montgomery when I don't bet him in a West Coast event. A couple placements though that I'm probably going to place, and I'll have them all up tonight because I got to get them up obviously by the morning up at the picks page. I'll play a couple of the chalks, top 20, Homa, Morikawa. I think that makes sense. Sungjae, Tony Finau, and then probably top 30s. That's where I'll go, maybe Sahith and Straka. I probably will have a top 40 on Will Zalatoris. I've seen some people actually tout him for the win this week. I still feel like I need to see a little bit more from Zalatoris. I do. He seems healthy, though. The fact that, I'm playing this bear of a golf course, even though he almost won here a couple years ago, he seems healthy. The fact that he's playing this 72 hours later. So, you know, you trust players' judgment that they know their bodies and know how they feel. But I couldn't get there with Zalatoris, even though he did pop on a lot of the models this week.
Yeah, I was hoping he wasn't going to, like, everyone was just going to instantly give him like credit again. Like, I mean, like, he would be a fun, like, 85-1 ticket to have in your account or something. But at 50, you're kind of like, wait, whoa. We have one tournament of sample size of him playing well. And like, he's already back to like being in the same breath with guys that we have, you know, seen do this kind of week in, week out for the last
bias.
Couple years.
Recency bias. Everybody remembers that he should have won this 2 years ago. No disrespect to Luke List. Yeah. And, you know, kind of gave it away on the back nine, found themselves in a playoff. And then Luke List, who's not one of the better putters on the tour, well, when you're a horrible putter, just stiff it to 3 feet on the playoff hole and then make a short birdie. And, you know, that should have been Zalatoris' first win on the PGA Tour, but it wasn't.
One other thing I want to bring up quick before we go, guys, it's just, Matt, it was another thing you and I were talking before we hit record, but it was we don't often talk about it on here. I think often because we don't get these opportunities, but I know everybody living rest of country outside of Nevada has a lot more availability to some of these odds boost bets and stuff like that. Like, at the end of the day, we're still betting. This is betting. Whether it's the NFL, college basketball, NBA, golf, we're still betting, and if you do get a guy who is boosted from a, like, I'm just going to take the guys at the top. I mean, if you saw if I saw Shoffley, Morikawa, Homa boosted to 15, it's a bet for me at that number. I might not be betting those guys at 12,
yeah,
but it's a bet for me at 15, and it would be. And it's just, I do think that's, I know that's something we're not able to talk directly to everybody's individual situation, but they, it just keep in mind, obviously those boosts do, they do matter. And those are just because we talk about guys that we like and fit stat profiles and stuff like that. Numbers are still are the end all be all with what we end up betting. That's what matters the most. So there was a situation with Sungjae here in town at Caesars that me and you were discussing, Matt, specifically, but I just want to spread that message. I think to everybody else, rest of country, that has many more options when it comes to that stuff, that it's not something we ignore. There is absolute value in that.
Yeah, no, there's any odds boost, anything, like, I mean, take advantage of all of that stuff. I mean, like, seriously, like take advantage of all of that stuff, because it will pay off over time. You know, I mean, like, that's the thing, is it will pay off over time. And certainly something that we should be looking at whenever we do all this, guys. As we said, be sure and head over to VSiN.com. You'll get all the plays. If you happen to miss anything, and anything we add will be up over there as well, including Wes's DP World Tour stuff will be over on VSiN.com as well. So be sure and take advantage of that. If you want to tweet at us, any questions, any thoughts, any stuff that you're looking at here, of course, you can always tweet at us over on the Twitter machine. For Wes, for Kelly, I am Matt. Good luck on all your farmers' bets.